We are live streaming and recording.
Okay. Well, it's It is April 20th. It's snowing. Welcome to Illinois again. I think the time of 9 o'clock having come and gone, I think COGFA is ready to get going. I believe we're gonna start with roll. Bree, if you wanna go ahead and get started with that. A couple more members coming in.
Senator Aquino. Senator Bailey.
Good morning, I'm here.
Representative Davidsmeyer.
Here.
Senator DeWitt.
Present.
Representative Ellick.
Here.
Representative Grant. Representative Harper. Representative Hernandez. Senator Taylor.
Here.
Representative Moeller.
Here.
Senator Sims. Senator Severson.
Here.
8 present.
All right, having 8 present, we have a quorum and we are ready to move forward with our fiscal year 2022 group insurance program. We're going to start off with CMS and then we're going to hear from some of our vendors. So, Director, if you'd like to go ahead and start, we'd love to hear from you.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me? Okay. Well, good morning. Thank you, Chair Davidsmeyer and Co-Chair Kaler and members of the commission. And I'm very happy to join you here today. The overall health and wellness of the state's workforce is a top priority for the Illinois Department of Central Management Services, or CMS. And over the last year, we have challenged ourselves to provide the highest level of support for all 440,000 covered lives in our care. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, we have continued our commitment to increasing budgetary efficiencies while mitigating adverse health and financial risk to our health plan participants. We recognize that the impact of this pandemic stretches far beyond physical health. So the agency has ramped up our outreach and communication efforts to also deliver critical resources about financial, social, mental, and emotional well-being for our employees and their families, including voluntary benefits, wellness webinars, and information about the personal support and employee assistance programs. At the beginning of this year, we further expanded these offerings with the launch of Be Well Illinois, the state's new comprehensive wellness program. Be Well Illinois was developed to increase access to and engagement with our umbrella of wellness offerings while keeping a focus on health-related education and equity. CMS continues to push forward. And as we move towards ending this pandemic, I look forward to supporting a robust culture of wellness statewide. With respect to our COVID-19 response, I'm especially proud of the creativity, sacrifice, and dedication of that the CMS team has shown in these challenging and uncertain times, especially in the areas of benefit management, personnel, labor relations, property management, and agency services. I'd very much like to thank you for your ongoing support, and I look forward to working with the members of this commission to continue our efforts to provide efficient and quality service to all employees and plan members we serve in the future. I am joined today by Deputy Director of the CMS Bureau of Benefits, Shiloa Tubbs, Chief Financial Officer for the Bureau of Benefits, Colin Brewer, Chief Financial Officer for CMS, Karen Pape, and Deputy General Counsel for the CMS Bureau of Benefits, Tyson Rothermick. We are happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Director, and everyone from CMS for being here. I know we've got a lot of vendors doing remote, so we're kind of going back and forth from remote to in person today. Do any of our members have any questions to start off with? I know that was kind of a quick overview, so we could have some questions coming up a little bit later. Yeah, Senator Severson.
Sure. Are we going to do, is there going to be a review of this, of the cost?
Yeah.
What, how the cost for projected for this year versus what was last year?
Yes, if the director would like to go through that.
Sure, thank you for your question. I'll ask CMS, Bureau of Benefits CFO, Colin Brewer, to take us through a comparison between last year's cost and this year's projected cost.
Looking at his arm, it looks like he's already given up our costs.
He's just making good use of his benefits.
We're putting up the good fight every day. Thank you, co-chairs and members. If I take a look at what we were projecting, I'll go back actually a couple years. For fiscal 20, we're expecting to see a total liability of just over $3.07 billion, fiscal year 20. We're actually seeing a 1.1% decrease in our projections for FY 21, down to $3.04 billion, and then only a 0.8% increase in terms of the overall liability to $3.07 billion. I believe COGFA staff has estimated the liabilities of the program to be somewhat higher, but very similar to those amounts. In terms of the appropriations for the program, we had a $1.92 billion appropriation for the general revenue funds in FY21. We're asking for an actual reduction of $70 million down to 1.8 for fiscal year of 22. And even with that reduction in the general revenue fund appropriation, we're expecting the hold cycle that we project to end fiscal year 21 at of approximately $1.216 billion. We're projecting that with a $70 million GRF decrease to remain flat through the end of fiscal year FY22. In terms of the liability projections that we have made, we've seen, I would consider to be a large number of successes over the last few years coming from benefits on behalf of CMS and the state of Illinois. We had negotiated, I believe, all of our, I don't remember the total number, but our labor relations group had negotiated all of the different collective bargaining agreements that fall under the governor under CMS. Two of the very large ones that we negotiated were for AFSCME Council 31 and also for the five different Teamsters groups. Those two collective bargaining agreements that last through FY23 included provisions that are going to save the program considerable amounts of money over the course of the terms of those agreements. We're projecting the AFSCME contract to save a total of $500 million over 4 years, and the Teamsters contracts to save approximately $150 million over a four-year period. In addition to the collective bargaining activities, our contracts management group has been doing yeoman's work in terms of renegotiating and rebidding almost all of the different benefits contracts that we have for the group insurance program, with over the course of FY21, 22, and into calendar 22 for our MAPD programs, we're expecting to save about $260 million through rate cuts, contract terms, and rate negotiations.
Can I just ask another quick question on, we've heard a lot about the, for the last year during COVID, we had substantial underutilization of healthcare. And when I look at some of these numbers on page 6, it looks like we're projecting some increased cost. Did we ever see that translate into any noticeable or significant savings due to no healthcare utilization during the last year from a COVID?
Yes, actually we did. It's very difficult to kind of go back and analyze exactly what didn't occur, but I can tell you anecdotally that from the period of January of calendar 20 through March of 20, one of our self-insured open access plans was processing claims about $11.4 million a week from in the last quarter of fiscal year 20, that number had dropped down to about $7.6 million a week on average. Similarly with our PPO, in the first quarter, it was about $7.1 million a week worth of processing, which dropped in the second quarter down to about $5.0 million. So we were seeing definitely reduced utilization in our self-insured healthcare programs. I think some of the rate negotiations that we achieved in subsequent time periods for our fully insured programs were reflecting the fact that those fully insured vendors were seeing underutilization during that time period as well.
Where is that reflected? That kind of drop then, is that reflected in when we look at the payments, your total program payments for 21 versus 22? And I'm not sure what your estimated total is. You gave a couple of samples of a couple that were 7 or 8 million a month total with those couple examples. I mean, that would be $100 million in the year. So is that overall
I was actually
reflected in lower cost?
Yes, I was actually looking back because we had we didn't have our meeting this time last year, but when we produced the projections for the FY21 budget in January and February of last year, pre-pandemic, the total liability that I was expecting at that point in time for FY20 was about $108 million more than I'm currently reprojecting FY20 at, now that we've seen the actualities come in from post-pandemic time periods.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Just to follow up in that same line of thought, once we get to the end of FY21, we'll be able to tell what the actual experience was. Do you anticipate that because a lot of these were maybe elective surgeries and things that were put off, that maybe we'll see an increase in the coming year? I guess we won't really know that until but it seems like that would be logical that if people put off doing some things that maybe they would, as hopefully we get out of the pandemic, they would then go back and do that. So how do we cover that budget-wise if that happens?
In some instance, we have seen a bit of a rebound in terms of our claims incurred that have been coming in the door. A pharmacy was never really impacted like the health and the dental side, because that's a very touchless service, really. So most people were continuing to just get prescriptions, and we didn't really see a change in costs there. We've seen healthcare costs come back, but not to the degree that they were pre-pandemic. I would say probably 75 to 80%. So we are taking that into consideration when we are reprojecting FY21 now and projecting into the budget year. Dental has as well come back, but actually a little bit less. I think that's more of it's a little bit different than health, in the sense that if you missed your annual in the last fiscal year, you're not going to come back and get three of them this year. You're just going to get your two. So we're seeing it come back, but I don't think some of those dollars ever will reappear. We have actually seen a little bit of an overall increase, especially in the last 6 months, not so much in the last quarter of FY20, but in the last 6 months in terms of our mental health expenditures. I've actually seen a little bit of an increase there. I haven't had an opportunity to speak to our vendor to see if there's anything in particular that has been driving that, but mental health, especially now with telemedicine and mental health being included in that. And we've heard so many stories about the increase in mental health needs over the course of the last year. That's something that you would probably expect.
I'm going to add Representative Hernandez to the roll. And I have a list of questions. So if I kind of duplicate some of the things we've already talked about, I apologize. Just bear with me here. What is the current amount of claims backlog? And how long are vendors in the group insurance program waiting to be paid?
The length of time that we hold bills for is a little bit different depending on the kind of bill that we're talking about. As I was mentioning, our self-insured programs, the PPO and the OAPs and the dental program, those are what we would consider payments that are going directly to providers and hospitals and dentists. So we keep those a little bit faster pace than we do to our fully insured products, which are payments to our larger corporate vendors. Our self-insured programs are now paid just about through the end of February of 21. And our fully insured programs are paid almost all the way through December of 2020. And we have roughly about $1 billion worth of bills on hold at this point in time. Kind of fluctuates through the month, but roughly $1 billion. We're expecting to end the fiscal year with about $1.21 billion. We'd had a considerable amount of our GRF appropriation given to us by the comptroller early on in the year. Normally, we try to spread it out about 1/12 of the approach over each month. But they had come into, it might have been in July or back in the last tax season, they'd accumulated a certain amount of money that they were able to advance us a considerable amount of cash, which allowed us to buy down the whole cycle, which is going to save the state a good chunk of interest payments. But that means on the back end, they don't really have enough cash to be able to support through the rest of the year. So it is going to have to grow a little bit before the end of June.
And I just couple follow-ups. So when you talk about the self-insured February 21st and normal insurance December 2020, do you mean those are sitting at the comptroller or those have been paid? Do you track them once they've gone to the comptroller?
I do. Okay. We track both the bills that are in-house, and because of that debt transparency report that was required by law a couple of years ago, we track both in-house and at the comptroller. And okay. virtually all of our bills are sent to the comptroller. In the past, we used to hold bills until cash was actually available. We changed our cash management practices with the comptroller so that we put ourselves effectively on cash management. And now mm-hmm. we send all of our bills over to them. So when the cash is there, they can immediately release them. And I think just that change in that process has probably saved us about $2.5 to $3 million a year in terms of interest, because we don't have that 1 week worth of processing time between our office and the comptroller in order to get a bill out the door.
Good, good. And you mentioned interest. How much is currently owed on the unpaid claims, interest-wise?
I don't have the amount with me at this exact moment. I could tell you how much I was expecting to incur in terms of liability, interest liability for this year, which was for FY21, is about $25 million incurred in total.
And obviously, you believe that's going to be lower than, well, obviously, it's less than that currently, what you owe. Do you believe?
Yes.
I mean, are you looking, guesstimate, 5 million, 10 million? I don't know.
Well, there's a couple different ways to look at it. There's the amount of interest that's accruing on the unpaid bills, and there is interest that has finalized its accrual on bills that have been paid, but the interest itself is yet to be paid.
Okay.
We're actually looking at about $110 million worth of interest that needs to go out the door that has already been processed and sent over to the comptroller. I'd say there's probably about another $8 million or so, it's kind of a guess, of interest that we owe that needs to be processed.
And we won't hold you to that exact number. I appreciate you. just the general understanding. So 110 million sitting at the comptroller, possibly eight more accruing.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the way that we process our bills, our third-party administrators on our self-insured programs, when they actually pay the claim to a provider, to a hospital doctor or dentist, they're making the actual interest payment on our behalf. And then at the end of each quarter, they let us know how much was paid over the course of that quarter, and then we fund that. So there's usually a quarter's worth of interest that's outstanding at any given time there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's see. How much unused fiscal year 21 appropriation authority for the group insurance program do you have to send to group insurance bills over to the comptroller's office? Or do you still have to send to group insurance? So how many outstanding bills do you still have to send over to the comptroller's office? Or
Well, I don't know exactly how many we have on hand, but I can tell you generally the process. For our fully insured programs, which operate at about $130 some million a month, we receive the bills for those programs on the 25th of each month, and then they're processed and sent to the comptroller in the first week of the following month. So at any given time, there's that many bills that are waiting to be sent over.
So approximately 130 million generally is waiting to be sent over. That's just the general timeline.
Yes. We don't, as a general rule, we don't hold bills in our office. It's just strictly the friction of the processing time between receiving a bill and processing it and going through all the approvals and making it to the comptroller.
Okay. I'm going to pause for a second. I'm going to go to Senator DeWitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Ford, nice to see you again. Last week during the appropriations meeting, we talked about the possibility. Can you hear me okay? Okay. We talked about the possibility of some of the federal aid potentially coming into the state could potentially be used to pay down some of this bill backlog that has occurred. Is that for the edification of this committee? Could you talk a little bit about that and how you see that playing out?
Sure. Thank you for your question. I'm not aware of any specific funds that are coming to us at this time.
Okay.
What I would say is that we work very closely with Gombe. And really Colum and Karen Cape work very closely with Gombe. So to the extent that there are funds or will become funds that are available to us, we would fully anticipate working as quickly as possible to pay as much down as we could. And then I'll just look to Karen and Colum to see if you know any more than I do.
Okay.
I have had one brief concept with OMB, a conversation with OMB on the general concept, but no specific amounts have been termed at this point in time.
Okay, thank you. I know there's been a lot of chatter about some of that federal money being used to pay down debt in all areas across the state budget. So I certainly hope and encourage you to continue to push for assistance with the backlog that you're dealing with currently. So thank you for that response. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I'm going to add Representative Harper to the roll. And so unused appropriation authority, how much unused appropriation authority do you have left for the rest of the current fiscal year for the group insurance program?
I think there are probably maybe two avenues in which I could answer that question. A lot of times people will discuss appropriation authority in terms of the general revenue fund with the $65 million reserve that's been placed on our program by office management and budget. That would be the amount that we would expect to lapse this year if that is held through the remainder of the fiscal year. On the other hand, people will also often talk about the health insurance reserve fund, which is the fund out of which the monies are actually paid to our vendors. We have a $5 billion appropriation for fiscal year 21. I'm expecting to really expend about $3 to $3.1 billion. That number is excessive, but it is strictly expenditure authority. It doesn't really have anything to do with the liability of the program or the cash flows of the program. It was kind of created in previous years when we were expecting, I think in maybe FY 19 or 20, we were expecting an additional potential $750 million in bond funds. We had a $6 billion appropriation back in 18 when we received just under $4 billion of bond funds. So that unexpended amount is large, but generally speaking, we look to expend an amount equal to all of the liabilities that come in for the program every single year. Holding them at the comptroller is in essence how we manage the cash shortfall of the program.
Okay, so the I muted myself again. So you're saying you have a $5 billion appropriation authority and about $3 to $3.1 is what you expect to spend. So you will not need, you don't believe you'll need any supplemental for fiscal year 21?
From the perspective of the health insurance reserve fund, no.
And from the GRF side, the $65 million?
I would always gladly accept any amount of additional general revenue funds from the legislature. That would be very welcomed. But I assume there are other financial pressures on the state in these times, and I will leave that up to the governor's office of management budget and you to discuss.
You sound like a smart person who understands addition and subtraction very well, and I appreciate that. So I think most of our departments would appreciate any additional funds that they would be sent their way, but I appreciate your comments. Any other questions from members? We can add Senator Sims to the roll as well. I'm going to go ahead and hit on the vendor support initiative really quick. What is your current...
That's overall. Questions for CMS.
I guess you could ask CMS that question now instead of the members. We're gonna move to the vendor support folks here in just a second, but I want to ask CMS a quick question. Do you know what the current backlog of claims are being financed through the VSI program?
Yes, because we've worked with the comptroller to actually reduce the hold cycle as much as we have this year, we've actually only have four bills that have been assigned to a qualified purchaser that are currently outstanding, and that equals, I believe, about $26 million. Okay. And I'm speaking specific to the benefits program. There's the VPP operates within CMS for a lot of different agencies, and I don't manage those numbers.
Yeah. Yep. Perfect. No, I appreciate that. So unless there are any other questions, I think we'll probably go ahead and move on to the next panel we have. Thank you all. If you want to stick around, there could be questions.
Follow-ups.
So thank you. The VSI VPP group, we have from the Vendor Assistance Program, Brian Hines and Patrick DeLaudi. Vendor Capital Finance, we have Li Chen. Pay Plant, we have Mirav Berry. And Illinois Finance Partners, Andrew Greta. We want to probably go through in that order if we want to start with Brian and Patrick.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Kaler, Chairman Davis-Meyer. This is Brian Hines. Good morning. I'm the founder of Vendor Assistance Program, or VAP. VAP is proud to have been the first qualified purchaser under the state's vendor payment program. And today we remain the largest. Probably easy. I'll just do a quick summary of what we've done and kind of where we stand today. In total, over the last several years, VAP has purchased about $6 billion of receivables. Some of those are Medicaid and timely payment, but the overwhelming majority were vendor payment program, or VSI. About $4.98 billion is through the vendor payment program. And of that, a little over $3.9 billion is healthcare, or HERF, receivables. The total amount that we have owed today is of invoice that we purchased and are awaiting payment by the state is $197 million. And of that, Column said $26 million. I think I had a little higher number, but you know, $26 million or $28 million is HERF. The total amount of penalty that we have owed to us today is about $78 million. And $42 million of that is HERF. Due to the pandemic, we weren't here last year. So as I talk about the payment cycles, I'm going to kind of talk about it in a two-year cycle. So over the course of the past 2 years, the comptroller's office and benefits have paid about $6 billion to base invoice amounts. As we're talking, it's roughly $3 billion a year is what you pay. In that same time frame, there's only been about $60 million of penalty payments that have been made. And where that's a very good fact, as Colm and CMS pointed out, the payment cycle is going down, which is reducing the overall amount of penalty that's owed. That's a very, very, very good fact. The payment cycles, there's still a huge discrepancy between the two, which is causing stress on the program, right? So as Colm pointed out, there's only four invoices outstanding, right? The payment cycle for the base invoices is down to just a few weeks, right? Again, a very good fact. However, the payment cycle for the penalty invoices is still years and years, right? So the most recent payment that we've received for a penalty invoice is from December of 2017. So imagine trying to run a business where your revenue, you're waiting several years to get paid. It's a challenging, again, a good thing that the base invoices are going down. It's tough to, it's concerning and potentially unreasonable that we're waiting so long to get paid. It has impacted the business. I kudos to the other qualified purchaser here today. A few years ago, there were more. And if you look at the monthly reports, some qualified purchasers aren't buying anymore. It is a challenge to wait that long to get paid. But again, the good news is that the payments are going down. The penalty amount is going down. As Colm pointed out, the projection for this year is $25 million of total penalty out of $3 billion expenditure, right? But as he also pointed out, the amount that's owed is $110 million. We're talking about penalties that are owed from years and years before, right? We still have, a whole quarter left of this fiscal year. And, we were estimating $25 million. The penalty that's owed is from years before. So with that, I open myself with any questions you may have. And thank you everyone for your time. Oh, I also do want to point out, I did talk about the delay in penalties. We do also want, we do respect and appreciate the job that CMS and the Comptroller's Office have done now through these challenging times and into today.
Thank you very much. And I think we're gonna hold off. We're gonna let everybody testify and then we'll ask questions after the fact, if that's okay. Let's go ahead and go on to, is it Lee?
It is.
Chen? Okay.
Thank you for having me at the hearing. I wanna thank CMS for everything they've done over the past year as well. They've been terrific in working with us. To date, we've done roughly 800 million of invoices. They have been mostly paid off. We've had interest historically, prompt payment penalty interest of I'd say roughly $105 million. There's about $2 million that remains outstanding. Overall, we've been very happy working with the state. We don't have a lot of invoices outstanding. I think Brian mentioned that the late invoices have dramatically reduced, which is good for the state. And we're happy to continue standing by and helping the state as needed. So I'll keep my statement short and you can move on to the next qualified purchaser.
Thank you. Nirav with Pay Plant. If you are on.
Can you all hear me?
Yep, there we go. Gotcha. Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present. I thank the committee and CMS for, again, working with us. So my name is Nirav Berry. I am the CEO and co-founder of PayPlant. We have been working with the state for many years. To date, we have done about $200 million in invoices. As the previous QPs have mentioned, there is not much outstanding in terms of actual invoice amounts to be paid. However, we are owed about $3 million in interest from invoices that were purchased back in 2018. So I would echo Brian and Lee's comment that these invoices are, that the PPP is taking quite a bit of time to get paid. That's all I'll say.
Thank you very much. And Andrew, Greta, would you like to comment as well? Andrew, are you on? I think you can. Andrew from Illinois Finance Partners. Okay, may not be on here. So let's go ahead and start with questions. I believe Representative Ellick had a question.
I do. Is there a statutory time frame that those penalty invoices are required to be paid? So are we, is if there is one, are we just not meeting it, or is there not one at all?
This is Colin from CMS. The prompt payment statute states that the interest payments will be made in a reasonable amount of time.
So, and just for anyone who hasn't been through any of these hearings before, I believe that reasonable is actually very broad, obviously. It allows you to stretch it as far as you believe reasonable reaches. And also, there is no interest charged on the interest,
which is
why you'll see them stretch out to December 2018, right? We're looking at 2 years of payments waiting to be paid where they will receive no benefit for having given that service to the state of Illinois.
Right. It was December 2017.
Oh, 27.
Was our most recent one. 17, yes, yes.
And
one more thing. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Thank you. There's also some, although we're not buying them through the vendor payment program, there are some late payment penalties that possibly could be owed and under timely payment. That's to the direct payments that Colin talked about. And those are required to pay within 30 days. I don't know how much is outstanding there, though.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Kidd.
Well, I guess the good news there is we don't have a penalty on the penalty. But what, How do you view this, and just in terms of projecting out when you're going to get to it? Is it only when we have surplus monies, or do you try to build into the system some catching up as we go?
We work as closely and in as much partnership as we can with the comptroller, but ultimately the interpretation of the term reasonable is theirs, and we do not necessarily have the ability to control the payment cycle under which these interest payments are made that is done solely by the comptroller. I can tell you that in FY20, they paid out about $83 million, or yes, in FY20, and so far in 21, about $54 million. And it kind of comes in spurts along with the cyclical nature of states' revenues. The tax season is probably more likely to see some payments being made at this time of year than you might see in February or November when revenues are a little bit tighter. But that schedule is completely guided by the comptroller.
So in other words, we're not forgetting about this. We know this is there. It's just a matter of we've got so many other pressures that we have to get to it. And I'm guessing, and any of the vendors can answer this if they want, that they understand that that's kind of the nature of the beast.
That's correct.
Representative Moeller.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you to CAGFA staff for this interesting arrangement. Can you provide a little bit of a historical perspective on what we've owed, or how much our liability payment, how much our liability balance was in prior years, maybe going back 10 years versus how we're doing now with the vendor, vendor assistance program and the debt programs that we have in place?
I don't have vendor payment program numbers historically specific to them handy. I could go back and do the analysis and provide that with you, provide that to you. I could tell you that going back historically, in 2016, we had incurred over $211 million worth of prompt pay interest. In 2017, it was $96 million, and it's gone down, especially since the issuance of the $4 billion worth of bonds. It's gone down to 51 and 46 and 30 and now 25. I'm sorry, 15 in 2021. So I could give you a time frame in terms of how that's gotten paid out to the QPs if you'd like to see a more detailed analysis. I'd be happy to follow up with your office.
Okay. That would be great. And then is there a projected time frame for when we expect this to be paid down completely, or is that not a realistic possibility?
Well, I don't know what the time frame is. I can speak conceptually to the fact that as the hold cycle remains, and if it continues to remain as low as it currently is, there's a very short window between when we're hitting that 90-day period and when the bill is actually getting paid. And as we've discussed, there's only a handful of invoices that are outstanding. And as Mr. Hines pointed out, the amount of interest on each bill nowadays is getting less and less. So the amount accruing and the amount accruing into the future, I would expect to be less than that 110 that's coming in from the past. So any efforts that the comptroller can make with additional revenues are going to be what gets us to that point where it's paid out.
Okay.
But I do not have a time frame.
And then one final question. How much are we paying in interest on these? How much is it costing us to have this?
In terms like the rate, or in terms of total dollars?
Total dollars.
Like I said, I'm expecting, in terms of both timely payment interest and prompt payment interest for FY21, to accrue about $25 million, about $29 million in FY22.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Severson.
I guess just a follow-up question along those same lines. On the interest that's owed back to 2017, isn't there in gap accounting or in any normal or legal rulings on what timely means? I can't imagine that 2017 would be considered timely. If that's the case, I'd love to pay my income taxes timely. But I mean, talking about 4 years old, is that something they agreed to or thought was going to even be a possibility when they entered into that contract with the state that they'd have to wait 4 years without any additional interest or payments?
I don't think I could speak to any real legal interpretations of what reasonable means or specifically how the comptroller has arrived at their particular payment schedule. I don't think I would want to opine on that.
But their decision is not to pay anything towards that, just to pay towards medical bills and not pay the interest and the penalties that are owed to these vendors. The decision by the comptroller is don't pay them, even though their bills are in line higher. The decision is not to pay them and then to pay out providers instead. But that's a comptroller decision now.
It is. When there have been times, like in the tax season, and there are excess revenues coming into the state on a timing basis compared to what's going out, they have made efforts. Like I said, about $130 million over the last two fiscal years has been paid. But generally, they have taken the position that they would prefer to pay a bill so that interest stops accruing as opposed to paying interest.
So part of that 2017 debt is being paid each year?
I would have to go back and actually look and see where the oldest bill is. But yes, they're going to pay it first in, first out.
Okay. All right, thank you.
So just to clarify, I'm looking at this from a personal standpoint, right? If I could go to my bank and say, I want to only pay principal on my mortgage and not pay any interest till the very end, because I know I don't have to pay interest on my interest, my mortgage would cost me a whole heck of a lot less, right? So we're holding the bills that don't cost us anything, and we're paying the ones that cost us a higher interest rate. What is that current interest rate?
For prompt payment, they operate with a grace period of 90 days, and after that, it's 12% per annum.
Okay. So it's understandable why the state would not want to apply that same interest rate to these bills. To the folks involved in BSI and VPP, have you talked to your colleagues that have left this sphere that are no longer lending to the state of Illinois?
So this is Brian Hines from BAP. We've spoken with the QPs that have left, and we've also spoken with our financiers. And you know, we're not going anywhere. We enjoy our relationship with our vendors. Even if we're paid a week after we buy the invoice in the 91st day, we're still going ahead and doing it. We understand our role. We're the cash flow for these companies, whether there be an HMO that you ask to pay their doctors and hospitals in 30 days and wait to get paid at least till day 91 to get paid with their cash flow, or small mom and pops, minority businesses, you know, outside of the HERF space. We understand our role. There are questions that get asked, you know, what is this term, you know, what is reasonable to the people that lend us money to buy these receivables? It does lead to some difficult conversations, but again, we're not going anywhere.
And I appreciate that. I'm going to follow up by asking about inflation. You know, when I talked to my parents about their first mortgage, they were talking about paying 18% interest. If we get to that point, are you still in this sphere at 12% interest?
Anyone else can jump in. Again, we're not going anywhere. We've developed over the years, we believe very good relationships with our vendors, and we are their cash flow. Again, HERF is different than, a big HMO is different than a little mom and pop. And they know they can turn to us when the state is late in paying, and we finance them, on the first day that the penalty, begins. So whatever this becomes, we're doing a business now where we might be accruing a penalty or earning something for 2 or 3 weeks and then waiting years to get paid. So I don't know what's worse, that or inflation, right? But we're not going anywhere, right?
I appreciate that. I just thought I'd ask the question.
No, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I might suggest that we do our roll call before we start losing. Before we start losing people, if we want to deviate from that, you need to do your motion and roll call.
Yeah. I think we
we're going to actually do it. Just vote by attendance roll call. So you should know that if you're here and you're counted on the roll, then we will do that at the end and you will be considered a yes vote.
Okay. Even if you've left.
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Any more questions? Okay. Representative Hernandez.
Yes. Just quick, to Mr. Brian. Is it Brian Hines? In your testimony, did you say your company is the only qualified purchaser currently purchasing under the vendor payment program?
No, what I said was some qualified purchasers have left and gave kudos to the ones that are still here. Over the last 7 or 8 months, we're 98.8% of the invoices going back to August. And in 2021, we haven't seen a March report yet. We're the only one that purchased in January and February, but I think that could be a combination of, as Colin pointed out, the shorter payment cycles and the waiting years and years to then actually collect the revenue that we've earned. Thank you.
Let's see. One kind of just a quick follow up question: How has COVID-19 affected your business with the state of Illinois? I mean, obviously, as we've discussed a little bit,
right.
Obviously the holdbacks have gone down. You've been paid on the base bills a little bit better. But has it had any positive, negative impact on your business?
I would say no impact on our business.
Okay. Thank you very much. If there are no more questions, I think we'll move on to the next group. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's see. Let's start with our first panel. We've got the HMOs. We've got Blue Cross Blue Shield, I believe, Annette Martinez and Robert Miller. Health Alliance, we have Sinead Rice-Madigan. And with Aetna, we have Brent Hunter. So if we'd like to start with Annette and Robert from Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Great. Robert Miller, Bob Miller, since this is a friendly group, I hope, today. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you to the senators and representatives that are on this committee. We appreciate the work and efforts that you put in. We also appreciate working with the CMS team led by Janelle. And of course, our favorite, since he pays us or releases funds, Colin. And appreciate some of the questions that you guys have had. From our standpoint, we also do appreciate that we were awarded the next contract for the next time period. So we appreciate that starting in the next fiscal year. You asked a question about what does the claims process look like and what has happened for COVID. We, as an organization, of course, our premium for what we do from our HMO standpoint, we pay our providers on a timely basis and accept the premium from the state. And we do participate for the HMO program with the vendor support initiatives. So we do share in some of those funds. But we have based on the claims processing and what we've processed for through fiscal year 20, and of course, we're haven't finalized fiscal year 21 until after June. But there was a $26 million credit from an MLR adjustment that is going back to the state. So claims were definitely down in second quarter. And some of the questions, we see some of the claims going to be going up in 21, you know, so part of fiscal year 21 and part of fiscal year 22. Actuaries, we don't have all the answers to that. We don't know what the potential of long haulers are going to be. You know, there's some potential for that from a claim standpoint. But that's it from our standpoint. I appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully there's some questions at the end.
Thank you, and we'll go on to Sinead from Health Alliance.
Thank you, Representative. Good morning. My name is Sinead Rice Madigan. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Health Alliance and been with Health Alliance for 13 years. And like Bob, we appreciate our long relationship with the state of Illinois in providing health care benefits to employees and retirees over 40 years now. Health Alliance is primarily providing services to those outside of Cook County and those immediate, primarily central in southern Illinois. Health Alliance provides HMO benefits to around 75,000 members in that realm around the state. And we too have provided a credit back to the state of Illinois from our medical loss ratio and in terms of the amount of claims we paid over the COVID time period. Of around $10 million. We too have been providing under executive orders and expanded telehealth benefits at $0 coverage to state of Illinois members and in covering their inpatient stays relative to COVID diagnoses. And we'll continue to do that as we work with Director Florida and her team there under the pandemic executive orders with the state of Illinois. We also have availed ourselves of VSI and various vendors call today and have appreciated the opportunity to do that over the course of probably 10 years, I would say. We are owed outstanding interest back to 2018 and appreciate and understand the work that Colum and the Illinois Office of the Comptroller to work through that cash flow and opportunity for payment of interest, whether directly to Health Alliance as a healthcare vendor or to the VSI program. Again, appreciate the longstanding relationship with the state of Illinois and providing benefits to employees and retirees and their families, and welcome any questions as we move through the remainder of the call today.
Talking with my mute on again. We'll move on to Brent Hunter with Aetna now.
Great. This is Brent Hunter. I want to thank you. I represent the public and labor segment for Aetna and the fully insured. I want to thank you for the opportunity to our valued relationship and continue our valued relationship that we've had with the state for over 36 years in serving your employees and our members. With that, we've had this contract, particularly since 1984. We're proud to say that we've recently been awarded for continuance. That encompasses approximately 10,100 members as of April 1st of 2021. There currently are no claims on hold that we have today.
Great. Thank you very much. I think what we'll do is we'll go through and ask each panel questions. So if anybody has any questions, Senator Kaler.
Sinead, you mentioned about the telehealth under the executive order. Do you see telehealth as something that needs to be continued? And is it a benefit? I know it's a benefit to certainly the the employees that use it, but do you see it as a benefit long-term for the health plans as well?
Yeah, Health Alliance has always covered telehealth benefits in accordance with the cost sharing requirements. So it's just been, I think, something that's come about due to COVID and the limitations of getting into an office for a visit. I certainly think it's a benefit that can live alongside of brick and mortar. And again, like I said, we've always covered it just recently at 100% per executive order.
right, thank you. And anybody else have any questions? I will ask a couple. I believe some of you mentioned how COVID-19 has affected you. Could you kind of explain what the effects of the changes during COVID has had on your members? I mean, obviously we've delayed some, certain procedures and things of that sort, but has it had any effect on your business as you look at it going forward? Whether telehealth, there's a number of things that have been added in.
Yeah, Representative, it's Bob Miller from Blue Cross. I wanted to add something on telehealth. And in the HMO environment, because of the relationship with your primary care doctor and the medical group, the telehealth services predominantly have always been there. So when, Sinead made the comment, that's been a staple in our HMO environment. But from the PPO or the OAP plans, those are definitely services that we will be continuing to offer after the executive order is done, but for appropriateness of services. You can't do everything through a telehealth visit, but yes, we will continue to do that. And we think that it's a benefit to the members. There was a commentary about mental health care, and I think it's a great opportunity for people in that environment to get services through telehealth services. And we've definitely had a bonus to our telehealth abilities and then through the mental health providers, and it's definitely helped. And that should probably have some long-term effects on keeping costs down. If people can get care through a telehealth service, it's definitely beneficial. It's a benefit from a cost standpoint and from ease of getting service.
Thank you. That's great. Let's see. Have any of you had any issues? And for the next groups coming up, some of these questions will be overlapping. So if you want to, include them in your comments, have you all had any issues with providers asking people for payments up front?
Health Alliance, this is Sinead Madigan. As Bob said, as well, Health Alliance has not held any payments to providers, and we're paying timely, partly in due to the budget cash flow that Colin mentioned, and also availing ourselves to the VSI programs as needed. So we have kept our providers whole from that perspective.
Great. Anyone else? I assume everyone else is operating in a similar fashion?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. that works for me. Any additional questions from members? Okay. I think we'll move on to our next panel. Panel two is the OAPs. We got Blue Cross Blue Shield, Annette Martinez, HealthLink, Stephanie. Oh, I'm going to mess this up. Bojicic. And Aetna Brent Hunter again.
So it's Bob again from Blue Cross. Okay. Thank you guys and appreciate the ability. And we're new offering under the OAP open access plan for the next fiscal year. Appreciate being awarded the contract. We have a benefit differential and a network contracting status that it was not available the last time the OAP went out to bid. So it was a perfect opportunity for us to generate, I think, a significant savings for the state and for the employees of the state, because we have a significant reduced network, meaning reduced in our reimbursements, and that will definitely show in savings to the plan. And then our broad PPO is tier two, which is of course across the entire state, and then out of network for tier three. A lot of similar things that we've said from an HMO standpoint, but something that's important with our relationship with our providers is we're not going to hold payments to our providers under the OAP plan, even though it's an ASO environment. we are going to continue to pay our providers because that's an important status for them, being with Blue Cross, that they're able to receive payments. And when somebody comes in with a Blue Cross card, they know they're going to get paid. So we'll work out with our friend Colum on timely payments to us, and want to make that comment very clear, and he's very well aware of our discussions on that. But we appreciate the opportunity to be offered under this plan, and we look forward to the enrollment coming for the next year.
Thank you. And Stephanie with HealthLink.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Stephanie Wojcic. I am the regional president for HealthLink. It is a pleasure to be here before all of you. It's a privilege to serve the state of Illinois employees. We have been serving this state with the OAP plan for over 20 years, and we were just awarded the new contract beginning 7/1 of 21. We are known for our broad access under Tier 1, which is the lowest cost share for employees. We've been good partners with the state all along. We have that long-standing history, and we continue to align ourselves with the strategic priorities of the state. You heard earlier from the director that promoting well-being and engagement is important. We are known for making sure that what we do aligns and supports the state's initiatives. In terms of telehealth, we've always had those virtual visits. We're happy to see that the employees are now seeing the convenience to access non-emergent care in a different way. So we hope that that continues, even as people become more comfortable going back and seeing their primary care physicians face-to-face. So thank you, and I'll address any questions.
Thank you. And Brent with Aetna again.
You got it. All right. I'll save a little pieces as we go through here. So the self-funded, we're proud to have had the partnership on our OAP product since 2010. Recently, we're awarded a continuance. We're serving approximately 33,784 members as of April 1st. The state claim side is funded and processed through February 1st of this year. The local government group, there are no claims on hold as of today. The TRIP, there are no claims on hold. And then the SIP has claims funded through and processed through 7/1 of 2019. With that, we concur with the telehealth initiatives and the other support as we've gone through these COVID times and working with the state and Janelle and the team, as well as the infrastructure that we built out with CVS and the health hubs to help support those urgent cares and those needed throughout the state as well.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, I think we'll go ahead and move on to the next one. QCHP, Brent, you're up again.
All right. with our quality care product, we were awarded that back in 2016. We currently have 54,764 members as of April 1st. The state claims portion is funded and processed through February 1st. The local government, there are currently no claims on hold. And the TRIP, there are no claims on hold. The SIP, as we talked about, this is the one we have some outstanding, approximately $23 million on that are currently being held as of to date through 7/1 of 2019. Any questions?
Do you know what the delay is on the SIP? I mean, it looks like you said it's going back to 2018 or 19?
2019.
Okay. Can you give us a little insight on the delays?
You know, that's a Colm, I may let you chime in on that.
Thank you.
Sure. As you know, we actually, this is, you know, the COGFA hearing on the State Employees Group Insurance Program, but we also run three other health insurance programs for local governments, retired public school teachers, and retired community college employees. Each of the four programs that we run have their own enabling statutes. They have their own funding sources, and they each have their own treasury funds out of which they operate to pay all of our vendors. The community college program has a statutory funding design that has been structurally deficient effectively since its inception in 1999. We receive revenues from school districts, from active employees, from the retirees themselves, and then a general revenue funds appropriation. Each of those three funding sources from districts, teachers, or employees, and GRF equal about $4 million each in any given year. The program is about a $42 million liability per year. I think we're probably ended fiscal, I don't have this stuff with me, but I think we ended fiscal year 2020 with about $89.5 million worth of bills on hand on a program that's only $40 million a year. Then that's what Brent is referring to. The payment delays in that program are significant.
And I assume that the additional dollars, and then I don't want to get too off topic, but the additional dollars that are owed are the state's responsibility because the district and the teachers are paying their portion, or is this not a question you're prepared to answer? we can talk more about this offline.
It is a complicated issue. And we have been working with the governor's office and the Office of Management and Budget and the various stakeholders like IEA and IFT and retired teachers to develop a plan. It requires legislative action. We don't have anything in particular introduced for this particular session. But we're always working with all of the different entities to try and find a fix for the program. If it is a much deeper conversation, and if you would like to have one, we'd be happy to talk to you about that.
Yeah, I would love to. Any problem that the state has, I think we're better off fixing it sooner than later. If a 42, you say $42 million liability is now 80. Next year, is it going to be
120? And then 120.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, no, we'll have further conversations on that offline. Brent, it looks like Brent, you're off the hook for the rest of the panels. We'll go on
I was just going to add that the wellness initiatives that we've been doing with the state, and we're proud to give a quick update on that. While we've had the COVID challenges, we have experience with our Higgy stations, great success, and some other initiatives that we've done. We've kicked off the colorectal at home screening, where we have over 26,000 kits that were mailed out. The Higgy station, we had utilization pre-COVID of 72,171 members accessing the Higgy stations. If you recall, those are the stations that scales, that do your blood pressure, educational opportunities when people are sitting there to get engaged. This past year, while it was down, it was still 56,000, almost 57,000 members accessing that tool. So strong success there. As well as educations that we've been doing with partnering with Janelle and her team. So I want to make sure we update you on that.
Great. We definitely appreciate all those efforts. So thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Let's see. Panel number three, we've got Dan Foster from CVS Caremark. We've got Darren Avant and Karen Glagowski with Delta Dental, and Ashley Dale and Marie Hedgena and Adam Gotskind from ComPsych. We'll start with Dan from CVS Caremark.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Dan Foster. I am the strategic account executive from CVS Caremark. So I am the primary liaison between the state and CMS and CVS Caremark. We've had an active contract with CMS since 2015. Currently in negotiations for renewal of that contract for potentially another 3 years. As of right now, we manage about 160,000 lives across both the self-funded and fully insured groups that we've heard from today, managing the pharmacy benefits, and looking forward to continuing to partner with CMS and managing pharmacy benefits for state employees and beneficiaries moving forward. But happy to answer any additional questions or specific items that the committee may have as we move on.
Thank you, Dan. Darren and Karen from Delta Dental.
Good morning to you all. It's a pleasure to be here to speak with you guys on today. I am the account manager for the State of Illinois account and have been since inception. We are currently closing out 10 years of servicing State of Illinois regarding dental care services, and we're pleased about the opportunity for a new contract award that begins in July 1st of 2021. I'm joined by Karen Golgowski with the Delta organization, and I'll turn it over to Karen.
Good morning, everybody. I think it's still morning. So again, thank you for renewing the relationship with us. We are proud to serve the state and are excited that we can continue to do that. I did just want to mention a few grants that we did give away in 2020. So we gave $4 million in grants to public health clinics to keep them going through COVID. We gave $1.5 million to the Illinois State Dental Society Foundation to help dentists reopen their offices and increase their sanitation practices in line with OSHA. And we also implemented H2O on the go, which is a system where we replace water fountains in public schools, primarily in underserved areas, and we replace them with water filling stations for sanitation purposes, and we give each of the children a bottle that is touchless. It's a touchless system. So interesting timing, because we had planned on rolling that out prior to COVID, and that just increased the project. Happy to answer any questions.
That's great. It's good to hear all the additional things that you're doing to help out your folks. So any questions from the committee or Delta Dental? Thank you. I think we'll move on to CommPsych, Ashley, Ann, and Adam.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Anne-Marie Haina. I'm a sales executive with CommPsych, and I led the team here with our bid response and the final negotiations of the contract. I've worked at CommPsych for over 21 years, and I'm a lifelong Illinoisan, and it's my personal pleasure and an honor. And on behalf of Dr. Chaffetz, my colleagues here with me today, and the staff, we want to thank you for the opportunity to be your chosen vendor for EAP. We know it's a change for the approximately 72,000 employees we'll be servicing as of July 1st. So we're glad to answer questions. I'll give you a couple other notes and answer those earlier questions as well. CommPsych's been headquartered in Illinois for over 37 years. Since our inception, we work with many federal employers, including the IRS is one of our largest, and many other state contracts. So Missouri, state of Kansas, Arizona, and others. In terms of our mental health services and what we saw, I think there was a question about telehealth. Our employee assistance programs, meaning that access to therapists and counselors for 5 visits, which is an expansion in your contract from your prior model. They can include delivery through a variety of modalities that can be phone, video, similar to this type of format, scheduled text or chat. So interaction that's scheduled with a therapist by text or chat, especially when you're in a home with others who might not want to hear those conversations. And then of course the traditional face-to-face. So with COVID last year, we quickly fast-tracked the text capability. So that will be available as well. We saw a significant increase in the severity of cases last year. I think the CDC reported over 11% of adults having suicidal ideations last year. We saw that in our call center, either suicidal ideation or self-harm. So we're 24/7 with clinicians answering the phones in our center. So they're equipped to be able to handle that and get those individuals assessed and to safety. We don't charge the employee or the family member who used the services, so that payment upfront doesn't apply here. So I know this is our first hearing. We're looking forward to working with your employees, and pleased to answer any other questions, enhancements about the program, or any other highlights.
Thank you very much. Any, I guess we'll open up for questions for the entire panel three, CVS, Delta Dental, or ComPsych. Any questions? I have a quick question for Anne. How do you do the text side of it? When you say you're covered for five appointments, five meetings, how do you do the text side of that to decide what constitutes one?
Yes. Meeting? Yeah, totally understand your question. So under this model, there are five visits. So you have unlimited access to our call center to access services for any mental health or work-life services that are included. That guidance consultant, a master's level behavioral health professional, will really kind of talk through that with you and determine, your preferences for the modality. Of course, we're not going to recommend that when somebody has an urgent or emergent need. It's not going to be clinically appropriate. But if you do prefer to have the text sessions, we will connect you with a therapist. We send you a link, and then you coordinate that through the portal. And it is a scheduled session. So you know that Tuesday at 10 a.m., you're going to log on and you're going to have that one-on-one interaction with that therapist, and we'll continue and you'll get five sessions with that therapist each year for that issue. If you have a different issue that comes up later in the year, you can re-engage. There's also just support that you can text, just sort of in the moment kind of stuff. But those are scheduled sessions. That's your one-on-one time.
That's what I assumed, but I didn't want to assume that I knew what was going on. Senator Kaler.
And this is probably a question to Director Ford, but any one of the panelists that we've heard from can answer this. I'm in Peoria. I'm a patient at OSF. I can't engage in any activity with OSF when I don't get an email quite extensively asking for all my feedback, rating 1 to 10 on this service, that service. Do our vendors all do that, and do you get that information back in terms of a composite result?
So I'll defer to Shiloah Tubbs, our Deputy Director of Benefits, on specifically whether there are customer service surveys. What I will say is that one of the tools that we do use to hold our vendors accountable, our partners accountable, are our performance guarantees. And so every month we have a number of metrics or a scorecard that we use to assess whether or not they're meeting and or exceeding, ideally, the performance measures that are put place that are what we believe are the core of good customer service for the contract. So from our perspective, we're looking at those levers monthly. But to your specific question about a survey, I'll defer to Shiloah Tubbs.
Hi, I'm Shiloah Tubbs, Deputy Director of Benefits. So we contract with these carriers, the vendors that are on right now, and we do have customer service surveys in place in many of their contracts, but they're the ones that contract with the providers. So they're the ones that assess their providers' performance. So I don't know if anyone on the phone wants to weigh in, whether they get any of that feedback, or if it's just maintained at a provider level, but we at CMS does not.
Shiloh, this is Dan Foster at CVS. I can actually share some insight in terms of how we manage our customer service response. So similar to what Director Ford alluded to and what you yourself touched on, we do have performance guarantees incorporated into our contract with CMS. As part of that, we actually do administer our own customer satisfaction surveys. And I know that we get those reports back on a semi-regular basis and report them back to CMS annually. I know that from CVS's perspective, I believe we have a target threshold of 90% customer satisfaction. We've achieved about 95% over the past several years. So this is certainly something that we maintain a focus on and try our best to share regularly with CMS.
And this is Sinead Madigan. I would just say on behalf of Health Alliance, we do that as well, but we also do provider satisfaction surveys. So gauging the satisfaction of our providers to the health plan as suggested by Shiloh and Director Ford. So we continue to do that and take action where needed and provide feedback to our members as well as.
Yeah, this is Brent with Aetna, and we do as well. We use CAHPS scores as well. to provide reporting back and scoring.
And I guess just observation. So we really have two areas that we're trying to ascertain customer service. One is the provider themselves, which goes through the vendors that we have. And then another one is from the vendors themselves. So I think it's kind of important to get a feel for both of those areas. Thank you.
Great. Do we have any follow-up questions for that final panel, panel three? Okay. None. Hearing none, we will move forward with the ongoing health contracts for fiscal year 2022, starting with, let's see, panel four is the Medicare Advantage plans, HMO and PPO. We've got United Healthcare PPO with DD Raybuck, Aetna HMO, Brent Hunter, Humana HMO, Nisha Williams, and Health Alliance HMO, Sinead Rice-Madigan. Dee, if you'd like to go ahead and start.
Yes, thank you. My name is Dee Raybuck. I am the Account Vice President for United Healthcare. We are honored to be here and to serve the retirees of the state of Illinois. We have had a fully insured Medicare Advantage contract since 2018. Because it's fully insured, we have no claims on hold. We cover approximately 130,000 of your retirees. With regards to COVID, we gave a $3.7 million credit back to CMS. We did have an abatement in claims in 2020 due to COVID. So we were excited to be able to share that credit back to CMS. As of March 19th, which was the most recent reporting that I had, we had over 50,000 of your retirees that had been vaccinated. So that was really exciting news that we were able to share with CMS. And really our goal during COVID was to just remove all of the barriers so that members were really able to continue to seek care, get the care and the services that they were looking for. So they had a $0 copay for all COVID-19 treatment, all diagnosis. Of course, the vaccine and the administration of the vaccination is at a $0 copay as well. We too have offered telehealth. We've been doing virtual visits long before COVID even became a pandemic, and we will continue to do that. We are also strategically aligned with Director Ford and the CMS team around Be Well Illinois. So we're super excited to start rolling that out. We've got a wellness coordinator that's going to really be aligning with the goals of CMS and the goals of United Healthcare to ensure that the members are getting the best opportunities for health and well-being in 2021, 2022, moving forward. We too offer a annual member satisfaction survey. We do that on an annual basis, and I'm happy to report in 2020, our member satisfaction came back at 98%. Of course, we have not sent out the 2021 yet, but we will be doing that over the next few months, and we'll be reporting that back to CMS in early fall. And I will pause and see if you have any questions.
Thank you. I think we will move on to Brent at Aetna, and we'll hold questions till the end.
Yeah, like Dee Dee had mentioned with United, it's good to see we removed a lot of barriers for our Medicare population during these COVID times. We're proud to have our Medicare HMO offering since 2013 with the state, serving approximately just under 7,800 retirees. And it's important from a continuity of care to think about, we're taking care of the active population, then making a smooth transition as they turn 65 for a Medicare Advantage HMO offering. That transition and that continuity is critical, we feel. With that, we are rated from a star ratings. That's a quality perspective. You mentioned surveys, quality perspective. We're at a 4.5 on a scale of 5.0 with CMS or Medicare, which is extremely strong. And we're proud to have that with us. And that is based on a number of metrics that we provide back, working and collaborating with the medical arena, as well as our membership and providing back information and supports. With that, speaking of the surveys, we received our 2020 survey responses back at 98% enrollees responded favorably. And then 96% responded favorably in getting their care and tested that they felt that was needed. So strong numbers equally on the telemedicine. It was, we had going into COVID a little concerns around the engagement factor. We saw a huge increase in telemedicine visits with our Medicare population, which was encouraging to see. We also saw the provider community embrace the telemedicine access as well. We saw the outcome with our CVS, the prescriptions we would mail to the home. We saw a significant increase in the mail at home for the prescription drugs delivering. So with that and all, positive overall experiences I reflected back in the survey results. And again, we're proud to continue our partnership for the Medicare Advantage offering.
Yeah, thank you again, Brent. Humana, Nisha.
Hi, good morning. My name is Nisha Williams. I am part of Humana's group Medicare team. And we have proudly been serving the state of Illinois and their retirees since 2014. Humana currently offers an HMO contract in 13 counties in Illinois, covering about 6,400 members today. Over the past year, there have been a lot of adjustments due to COVID. From the member perspective, you know, Humana made the decision in 2020 to waive cost shares tied to the treatment of COVID-19 through the end of this year. So that's in place through December 31st. In the telemedicine space, cost shares there are also waived. And for members who need treatment tied to reasons other than COVID-19, Humana is covering those telehealth costs at 100% for primary care visits, urgent care visits, and outpatient behavioral health. And this past summer, some of the actions that we took for our members to assist in the pandemic included coordinating at-home test kits through LabCorp. And we also had a partnership with Walmart for drive-through test results through Quest Diagnostics. And that took place earlier in 2020. From a member experience, a lot of our services and programs did move to an online portal. As an example, Go365, which is our wellness program, gave members opportunities to earn rewards through virtual engagement, whether it was FaceTiming with family members, just to keep those social connections up. Within the Go365 program, there are three main areas of focus. The first being preventive care, the second being physical fitness, which Silver Sneakers participation does earn members rewards in that sphere, and the third being social engagement. A question I think the committee has asked is around any adjustments that we made to our claims tied to COVID, and Humana did issue a check for $1.6 million as a COVID adjustment back to the state. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Nisha. Let's go on to Health Alliance, Sinead.
Great, thank you, Representative. I'll be quick. I know I've already shared a lot of the same opportunities that we provided to our Medicare Advantage, or to our active employees and their families, we did also for the Medicare Advantage population. Health Alliance has been providing Medicare Advantage prescription drug coverage to state retirees in 48 counties since 2015.
And we have just around just under 3,000 total members in that product. And we too have been providing care through telehealth free, no charge to the member for all services, including COVID, as well as the testing requirements and the vaccines. And about a third of our members are vaccinated, and we continue to outreach directly to them and encourage vaccinations and providing access to where they may receive them. And really appreciate your the opportunity to speak with you today. And I'll just close it at that and take questions if there are any specific to MA. Thank you.
And thank you again. Do we have any questions? Senator Kaler.
Yes, I have to go back to Nisha. You mentioned that Humana returned how much to the state?
It was 1.6, and that was as part of the 2021 renewal negotiations.
Let me ask Director Ford, were there any others that did the same thing?
Yes, so, sorry, I'm getting a bit of echo. As we mentioned earlier, that part of our cost reductions were the function of a lot of renegotiated contracts. And that's one of the examples. I don't know, Colm or Shiloh, if you can provide a few more examples on specifics.
I believe we also received a credit in the range of $3 million from United. Most of the activity actually happened on the rate negotiation side. But those were two of the vendors that did provide actual cash rebates to us, refunds.
And what was the purpose, or what was the reason for those rebates? Was it the fact that they had less expense in terms of electives for healthcare?
I believe that's the case. I would probably defer to Shiloa on the specific contract terms that generated those refunds. If that's okay.
Yeah. So United had a term in their contract that allowed them to share back similar to medical loss ratio if they had a positive claims experience, basically, or favorable claims experience, if we made timely payments. As we've said, we weren't necessarily meeting that, but they were willing with this rate negotiation and contract negotiation to remove that clause in the contract and share back in the favorable claims experience. And that's where that 3.7 came from. And then I think it was similar without that clause, which is what Humana shared back as part of the rate negotiations.
And so were the only two, the United Healthcare and then Humana, in terms of sharing back?
I believe those were the only ones that shared a specific rebate, but the rest were savings achieved as part of the rate negotiations overall, considering the decreased claims experience.
Do we have a medical loss ratio with each of them?
We do not with the MAPD plans. We do with the fully insured HMOs. We have 92% in 2021, and our 2022 contracts are negotiated at 93%.
That's good to know. So it clearly there is a pattern that we have seen during the COVID crisis, which is pretty consistent across the board, that there are less expenses in terms of regular kinds of services that are provided by organizations. So that's all I have.
And really quick follow-up to that. We did have providers in other groups that provided a similar reimbursement back to the state. I heard 10 million by one and others, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Those were not
specifically based on a COVID concept, as they were based on the contractual provision for that minimum loss ratio.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And unless there are any more questions, we can move on to our last and final panel. IMED, we've got Joni Fontaine and John Nicolay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I am John Nicolay, the counsel in Illinois for IMED, and joined by Senior Account Executive Joni Fontaine. We'll try to be brief and efficient in keeping with your efficient meeting here. IMED has been the State of Illinois' vision partner since 2005. We're getting ready to enter into another four-year contract. We have about 360,000 members with great utilization numbers across the board. We have been working very efficiently through COVID with all of our tools provided online, along with provider updates. We do work with the VAP program, which is working fine, and we have no outstanding issues with Department of Insurance. We very much appreciate the relationship with CMS that IMED has built over many years. With that, happy to answer any questions, and I know Joni is available as well.
Any questions from members of the committee? Let's see. Have you seen an uptick in needs from your customers based on the amount of screen time that they've had in the last year? I don't know if it's the fact that I turned 41 last year, or if it's the amount of time I've spent in front of a computer or my phone, but I certainly need to go visit my my eye doctor, that's for sure. So a little bit of a joke. So. Was there a decrease in visits?
Yeah, so in the past plan year, there was a slight decrease for 2019-2020. And then there is a little bit of an uptick in utilization for this next plan year. So we're projecting it to be about, I want to say, 3 or 4 points higher this year as opposed to last year with regard to both exams and materials. So we'll see how the end of the year shapes out.
So, and similar to some of the other ones, their normal physical or their normal appointment, they won't catch up on the ones from last year. They'll just use their normal appointment for this upcoming term.
Certainly.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Hearing none, I think we can move on. I believe before we adjourn, we have a couple votes we'd like to take.
So I'd like to make a motion that's pursuant to 5 ILCS 375/5. I make a motion
you okay to with approve second?
The proposed renewed and amended versions of the following contracts for FY 2022, Blue Cross Blue Advantage HMO, Blue Cross HMO of Illinois, Health Alliance HMO, Aetna, HMO, Aetna, OAP, and HealthLink OAP.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Representative Ellick. Hearing that, I believe we have leave on the current roll without objection. 11-0-0. That motion passes.
I have a second motion to make pursuant to 5 ILCS 375/5. I make a motion to approve the proposed amended versions of the following contracts for FY 2022, Aetna Medicare Advantage, PPO, CVS Caremark, Delta Dental, and CompSych.
We have a motion and a second, Representative Ellick, again, and we will take that on leave as well without objection. We have that on a vote of 11-0-0, and that motion passes as well. With that, I believe we are finished for the day. I think we've spent enough time here together. It's great seeing people in person, and look forward to seeing you again soon in the future. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Good meeting.
Thank you.
That was a reminder. And